So EE Core is back.
EE Core, yeah. That's cool.
To many people's delight, I think.
Yeah, a lot of people were asking for that. Seemed kind of put off when they took it away, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely kind of a good thing.
I think it's good for everyone. I think it's good for LS Lab too. I don't really see what possible drawbacks it could have.
Well, in fact, it's exactly like how add-on developers will have a free version. Like, that's kind of the same strategy I had with Backup Pro. Was kind of, you know, release a free one and give people a bit of a taste and make them comfortable with it and see, you know, it could definitely be working out good for them.
I agree and disagree, because your Backup Pro-ish add-on, I mean, I have it running on my personal site, and, you know, that's all I use. So I do take full advantage of it. I think the big difference is that EE Core can't be used on commercial sites. I believe it's a personal and, you know, non-profit license only.
Okay, well, yeah, but I mean, still, in terms of getting new people familiar with the code and how it's set up and how things work.
Definitely, yeah.
You know, letting them kick the tires. Because, well, wasn't that kind of a barrier to entry, right? The $300 price tag?
Yes,
just definitely. To find out if you liked it.
Definitely. I mean, it's very difficult to justify, you know, spending $300 just to see how something works when there's free alternatives out there.
Yeah, definitely.
So I think it's a great idea. I think it always was a good idea, and I'm glad it's back.
Yeah, I kind of came a little late to it, so I wasn't. I knew of it with EE1, but I started with EE1, and then EE2 came out, so it never really crept on my radar too much. But just from a business standpoint, I'm stoked, because I mean, really, for people like you and I, it kind of opens up a bunch of new potential customers just right away. So I'm kind of excited for that.
Cool. And after our last dev conversation, we talked quite a bit about Stack Exchange, and we mentioned Expresso. And subsequently, we got a cool email from Adrian McNeil saying that, kind of explaining to us how he manages it. And what he mentioned, which was great, which we weren't aware of at the time, is that you can just subscribe to individual tags, and then you just get email notifications. So no need for an API. It's kind
of... Yeah, like, we don't really have to do much of anything, but... go to the site and fill out a form. It's kind of that easy, right?
Yeah. And apparently they've tweaked their support form since then as well. They're kind of, because I guess a lot of the questions on the Stack Exchange site now are, you know, third-party add-ons. And I noticed that a lot of them were Expresso, especially Expresso Store.
Yeah, I definitely noticed that.
So they've kind of divided their support page into an email support form on one side, and on the other side, a Stack Exchange kind of description of how it works. He even mentions how you should tag your question, which I think is really good.
Oh, that is smart.
And of course, Pixel and Tonic just switched over to Stack Exchange as well.
Yeah, I saw that. That's great.
Hmm.
That's really cool.
I find that quite a big move as well.
Yeah, in fact, what, did they give up on their, I guess, it, what, they were using Git Satisfaction, right?
They were, yeah. And they've done something pretty cool on their support page. They have... on their support page, you just have an input field where you can ask a question. And they're pulling in answers from both Git Satisfaction, because that obviously has the majority of their support questions already answered, but also Stack Exchange. I think Stack Exchange gets a bit of preference. It comes up first, but it works really good.
Have you given much thought to if and when you're going to move over into Stack Exchange?
I've given it some thought. I'm kind of biding my time, because I'm not entirely convinced just yet.
No.
No. I think it would be great, but I find it difficult to filter. Now when I go to the Stack Exchange site, you know, there's tons of support questions for specific add-ons, and I find that it's getting a bit flooded and...
a little noisy.
Yeah, there doesn't seem to be any way to organize that information besides the tags, which may be enough if people are tagging correctly. So maybe it's just a matter of figuring out what the best system is and trying to educate people on how to use that.
Has that been a problem, mistagging and a lot of clutter?
I can't say from personal experience, but to me it seems quite cluttered.
Well, I mean, at a glance, it is kind of tough to figure out what you need to look for. But maybe that just puts the onus on the search box.
Yeah, I mean... you know, if I go to the landing page, the first thing is how can Safecracker check blah blah blah. Then assets 2. There's a Carthrob question. There's an Expresso Store question. So of the first 10, I would say about half of them are third-party add-on support topics.
Interesting.
I guess my main concern is, how do you filter them out? So how do you say, I want to just look at, you know, expression engine questions, not third-party add-on questions. It's definitely, if you're going there and you're looking for support for Matrix or something, then that's easy enough. You look for the Matrix tag and you click on that, you get all the Matrix support questions. But what if you are more interested in just general EE stuff that's going on?
I mean, there is the ignore tag, but yeah, that could get cumbersome.
Yeah. So for now, I mean, it's working okay for me at the moment with the devotee forums and email support. I think for now...
Man, it's kind of ironic that as soon as the Stack Exchange thing started taking off, I'm with you, my support has kind of gone down.
Mine too, yeah.
I've got very few support requests in the last week, like maybe 3, 4, if that, which is way down from what it normally is.
Do you think you could attribute that at all to the Stack Exchange side? I mean, are there questions coming up there that other people are answering?
Yeah, I mean, my ego says to blame it on just good programming, but chances are people are getting support somewhere else. But, I mean, going through the Stack Exchange, there's very little. I only saw one or two different questions about my specific products.
Mm.
So, I don't know. But I do like it.
I wouldn't dismiss what you said earlier. I mean, I know you said it jokingly, but I found with my add-ons that some of them, they kind of matured to a point, like the sitemap module, for example. I can't remember the exact version number, but it got to a stage where, you know, it was very stable. It had pretty much all the feature requests that could have been asked of it.
Right.
And the support, yeah, the frequency of support requests just goes way down. The same has happened to me for several add-ons. And I think that's a sign of a mature add-on, that, you know, it's been through user testing on multiple servers, multiple environments, multiple types of testers. It's gone through the round of general feature requests, and, you know, what you thought was a good idea, you put in, what you didn't, you leave out. And it just kind of matures, or it gets to a point where, you know, it's pretty stable, and the type of support that you have to offer maybe is a bit different. So it's less time intensive.
Yeah, another thing I noticed too is that the support requests that I am getting now are generally ones I've heard before. So whereas before, I would feel like I had to go into their server and take a look and click around and try and replicate it. And now it's like I can just give them a list of like 3 or 4 different things. And 9 times out of 10, now that's what the cause is. Mm. Like, you know, just telling them to take a look at their execution time or their PHP limits or just anything along that. And every time this week, it's been like, oh, cool, that fixed me right up. Thanks, Eric.
Yeah.
Right on.
So I remember when I first started using Backup Pro, there were a few things that on particular servers, you know, it wouldn't complete or something, but for I don't know how many months now, it's been very stable and I've never had any issues. So,
yeah, I mean, Backup Pro itself is, in fact, you might be onto something, because even just thinking about it, I have no idea what else I would want to do to improve on it.
Right.
You know, like I've stopped getting, as you said, yeah, I've stopped getting support or feature requests, I've stopped getting bug reports. Now it's generally just the server's not set up in a way that, you know, allows them to back up 3 terabytes worth of data on a PHP server, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, man, maybe that's kind of where we're at, which is sweet, because, I mean, years of development and finally kind of getting to a point where it's feeling perfectly stable. No one's asking for anything to be done to it, and it just kind of starts, well, just selling and, you know, earning a straight revenue.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting place to be in.
Yeah.
But it's definitely an interesting idea.
And I guess that's one reason I'm careful about making big changes to add-ons, you know, because they've already been put through their paces. So
right.
By adding some, you know, a major piece of code, are you going to make it less stable?
That's an interesting thing, too. I got in a Twitter discussion with somebody once about somebody was giving Expression Engine a lot of grief because of the 2.3 issues, you know, all the bugs that were introduced, and just maybe being an add-on developer myself, I kind of empathize with them a little bit, where it's just like, you know, they put out this stuff, they're adding in all these features, bugs, it's unfortunate, and you always want to, you know, do your hardest to make sure it doesn't happen, but bugs do come up, and I was kind of defending them a little bit, and, hey, leave them alone.
They're trying their best.
Holy, this stuff's hard, man. From like Expression Engine, I imagine, I mean, if they do much of anything, someone's going to have an issue. You know, I mean, just changing the behavior even a little can affect so many different things. And the user base is very diligent every time there's a new release of, like, putting it through its paces and finding the bugs, which is great. I mean, wonderful that they do that. But it's got to get old after a little bit. We're just like more bugs again? Oh, God.
Yes.
It's actually kind of interesting, too. I noticed that when I first started developing add-ons, was every time I did a point release, you know, from like 1.1 to 1.2 or 1.0, there was always, on that first initial day where people would buy it or download it, instant bug reports coming in. Because 1.0, it's just, they normally haven't been put through their paces well enough. So I always kind of started scheduling my releases that way. Like, if I'm going to release, I need to make sure I have the next like 3 days kind of clear from client work, because bug reports are probably going to come in, feature requests, you know, I'm going to have to jump on this stuff and be, you know, Johnny on the spot with it.
Yeah. And I find that too, but I think it's okay as long as you realize that, we need to take the responsibility and very quickly fix any bugs that come up. So from a 2.0, it can very quickly go to 2.03 or whatever. But as long as we do that and make sure all the bugs get ironed out as quickly as possible, it's okay.
Yeah. The Expression Engine add-on community is kind of cool like that, though. I've noticed, like, all of us are very similar in that same mindset. And even Act just released Assets 2.0, and within a day, they were up to, like, 2.02, which is great.
Yeah.
Because we found bugs, and they quickly, I mean, from, you know, 2.0 to 2.02, that's two whole releases that you know, been vetted and worked on and people, you know, put effort into, mm-hmm. just to fix for customers. And within a couple of days, that's good. I'm pretty stoked on that.
Yeah.
And but it forces the rest of us too. It raises the bar, which is wonderful.
It does. And I found people to be very, very understanding as well. You know, people don't complain. They say, you know, they just report a bug and we go and fix it as quickly as possible. I've never had someone complain or, you know, get annoyed that they downloaded something with a bug.
Now, as long as you're really quick to them, and, you know, you don't want to leave them hanging. And generally, mm-hmm. with bug things, you've got to get on it real quick, because mm-hmm. people paid for code. I would be pissed. I would really be bummed if, like, I paid for working code to fix this problem, and it broke. It broke my whole site. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah,
I would be kind of bummed out. So I try and emphasize from that perspective. Like, that is kind of the ecosystem we work in. People buy snippets of code to do certain functions. So it needs to work. It needs to be good. So, and if you're going to hand over $1, that's not right.
Right.
Did you hear about Aaron Schwartz at all?
Did you, of course.
Yeah, that was curious. I was thinking about that in terms of, I mean, obviously never met him, only read about, you know, some of the things he's done and the nonsense he kind of went through with the district attorney, and, you know, basically just trying to railroad him and make an example of him, it almost seemed like. But I was thinking about that in terms of what we do, not you and I, but just all web developers. And it kind of raised some interesting questions of, like, because basically what they were going after him for were things that all of us do on a daily basis. Like, he basically went into a network that had allowed access, unlimited access to JSTOR to download documents, and that's exactly what he did. But because the government didn't like that or how it was interpreted, even JSTOR decided, no, we don't want to do anything against this, the main company. The U.S. kind of started to railroad him a little bit. 35 years in prison, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Just over, like, downloading documents that he was legally allowed to download.
Right.
Kind of scary stuff.
It is. And I actually read that they actually released all of those documents and made them publicly available as well.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, that whole thing, it rubbed me wrong. It really does. In fact, it's kind of sad. Like, this dude was the one who helped to write the RSS 1.0 spec. Like, that's at 14, too. Like, a cool dude.
Yeah.
Just to throw him through the ringer like that, just, I don't know. It's I guess the lesson is, like, you know, stay on your toes, because if they want to get you, they can get you. Just sounds really paranoid as it says out loud. But, that whole thing is just kind of, just a bummer.
I mean, he gave a great presentation, which I watched after I heard about his death. But really, the message he was sending that is that the people have power, and if we stand together, because he was talking about blocking SOPA and these other things that
right.
were...
Right, big hand in that.
Right, and that really came from, you know, the people getting together and just saying no to something that was going to be easily passed through Congress. I think there's definitely a few lessons to be learned, and yeah, it's quite a sensitive issue.
Yeah, definitely. But if anyone's ever heard of Aaron Schwartz, you should definitely look him up, because this is something worth considering, even for a couple of minutes.
Yeah.
Did you notice about the chat? Like, it kind of went away and now it's back. Although, I guess, did you ever participate in that? The EE help chat?
I didn't, because I'm in GMT plus one in Europe, so I didn't actually... Although, I stay up quite late in general, but I didn't stay up. I think it was on at...
Wow. Yeah, it's like a Wednesday, super...
It was midweek, around midnight or something like that. And to be honest, I had better things to be doing. But I'm glad to hear this being continued, and they've made it a bit earlier. So now it's only me, I think, 10:30 here. I'll definitely be trying to join it. You had a tweet, which I saw was posted as Tweet of the Week.
Yeah, I saw that. I was like, right on.
Do you want to fill people in on that?
But basically, I had somebody return a copy of Export It. And, you know, which is fine, fair enough. But didn't give a reason. And it just kind of left me scratching my head. I'm just like, you know, I wonder what they didn't like. Was it broken? Did it not work? Just absolutely no answers to those questions. And I turned to Twitter and whined.
Do you have any way of contacting them?
I did send them an email, but I always feel kind of weird about that. You know, I mean, I feel like I'm allowed to do it, but I don't know. It seems a little clingy, you know? Like, why didn't you like me? So I just kind of go into it kind of contrite and just like very apologetic. Hey, I'm sorry to be bothering you. I don't mean to be that guy, but I noticed you said, you know, return this thing. And I was just wondering, you could tell me why.
I think that's perfectly fine. I mean, you're writing them a polite email. You're being honest. You're saying that it's no problem, right?
But yeah, absolutely.
It shows that you care, which, you know, is an important thing. I wouldn't take it personally, though. I'd never take it personally. I mean,
I've learned that.
Yeah.
Some people just don't like it. You know, I mean, you can't please everybody. There's no way.
Yeah. And people do. I have had people return things for completely justified reasons, and it was nothing to do with the product. It was just like, for example, the sitemap module, you know, it generates an Google XML sitemap, and people have
right.
downloaded it thinking it'll create, you know, a front-end sitemap for their website. So,
oh, wow.
So it's just, I don't know how that happened, but a miscommunication, and if they need a refund, that's completely fine. And quite often, I guess, those people won't give feedback because there isn't really constructive criticism to give in that situation, other than...
That's a good point.
I don't know, maybe it wasn't clear enough on the add-on description. Anyway.
Yeah. Okay, here's something. You have EE1 add-ons, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, I have add-ons that are both EE1 and 2. Yeah.
Have you given any thought to when or if you're going to... stop supporting those? I'm just curious. I don't do it, but I'm just curious.
To be honest, what I did was I actually did stop, not I never stopped supporting them, but I stopped developing them further. So for
right.
example, the sitemap module, when was that? It was, I guess it was close to a year ago. I just kind of, in the changelog I have, you know, end of feature development for EE1. And I just left it as it is because I know it's stable, I know it works, it does everything it needs to, and all the additional features that I've added have been only to the EE2 version. Rarely, if ever, get specifically EE1 support questions coming in.
But you have no intention of ever, like, stop selling? Because I assume they're still selling, right?
They're still selling, and they work perfectly fine.
Right.
So I've no plans to stop them or to stop supporting them. You know, there's still people using EE1 probably because upgrading would be too much of a hassle, or just their system is probably too customized to justify it. So,
right.
I still want to give those people the opportunity to use the add-ons.
Yeah, I mean, if you're not doing much support or development on them, it's just, you know, it's profit.
Mm-hmm.
No reason not to. All right.
Yeah.
Good answer. I was just curious because LS Lab, I guess they stopped, or they're going to officially stop supporting it, or did that happen already? Do you know?
I'm not sure, no.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've done anything with E1. Have you ever used Multisite Manager? I was thinking about Multisite Manager the other day. In fact, I think about it way more than I should for someone who doesn't really use it. But it kind of bothers me for some reason. I'm just curious if you've ever used it.
I have, yeah. I have a few sites using it at the moment. Not my own, but client sites. And, I mean, the only real benefit is single login, right? But otherwise...
Yeah, that's true.
Otherwise, and maybe cost. But otherwise, really, there isn't really a need for it. And it's interesting that you bring it up because I was checking out the blocks. It's still in private beta, but there's a support forum. Someone asked the question if they'll be offering a multi-site manager option. And they ended up saying, they listed out the benefits or what they see as the benefits of a multi-site manager. And it really didn't sound justified for the amount of work and complexity of licensing agreements. So it doesn't sound like they're going to go down that path.
I'm actually all right with it. I've never been a fan of the idea. I built out one MSN network, I guess what you should call it. I don't know. It's not a site. It's a series.
Hmm.
But just the idea of it, just from a performance standpoint and a load standpoint, kind of scares me a little bit. I certainly wouldn't want to do an MSN site with a network of really popular sites.
Yeah.
Because, if one of them gets popular, then the rest of them kind of go down if there's any, issues with the server. So one site getting popular all of a sudden takes the other ones offline.
Yeah. And I'm actually, a client of mine is having an issue. So they have three sites and they want, they got in touch with an SEO company and the SEO company advised them to
move it to SEO next.
Yeah. They advised them to move it to a new server, and they came to me and I said, well, it's really not that simple because it's a single content management system running these three sites. So if you ever come up with a situation like that, it makes it really difficult to move a site.
Hold on. Moving one site, the SEO company suggested that they move the site to a different server?
Yes. Yeah.
See, this is a great segue into why I don't like SEO people. That makes no sense. And honestly,
it makes no sense at all. I tried to explain this as well, but
what possible gains could there be to that? And weird that an SEO company would be recommending hardware changes. Not a big fan. I always look at SEO people as snake oil salesmen. Nobody's really sure what they do. They always make it a whole oh, trust me, and a wink and a nod type of a thing. And you're just like, what do you do? Explain to me what it is that you do.
The thing is that SEO changes from month to month.
Right, that's kind of my point. And with the good agencies I've worked with, they generally always just build out good sites. That is your best SEO thing ever. Build out a site that people want to go to and SEO will increase. That's how Google works. This is a very simple thing. And SEO people come in and just convolute the whole process and start throwing around weird ideas. And it is so irritating from a...
Well, in terms of SEO, I try to simplify it into two aspects. There's the technical and then there's the content. And the technical is what you do when you build a site out, right? You build it with good URLs and the page structure and etc. And then you have the content, which is where you develop a good content strategy so that the search engines can come to your site and see your content as valuable.
Right.
And it's really...
Idols and...
Yeah. And it's really just that simple, and it's not rocket science. And I think I agree with you that it seems that SEO people make the whole thing seem very complicated, far more complicated than it needs to be. But that I think people just want quick solutions. People want to, people ask the question, "How do I get onto the first, the first Google results page?" And that's not an easy question to answer, especially when your site's.
Ask though.
Especially when your site's already built out and it's full of content. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, in fact, I've worked with one agency that has a really good SEO people. I still have no idea what it is that they do, but I really like their strategy, which is basically to build out content. In order to be ranked anywhere for the search engines to find you, you've got to have content. You've got to have people caring about your content. And you don't want to half-ass it, which it kind of goes back to my earlier point of build out a good site. you know, you build out a site that people want to go to, they're going to go to it. They're going to care about it. They're going to link to it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you build out mediocrity, I mean, it's kind of like what happens to all of us when we hit a link that we don't want? We go to the site, we see it's crap, we leave. Like, how is there value in that? And that's kind of what I feel a lot of SEO people focus on, is just, we just got to get them to the site as opposed to keeping them on the site once they're there.
Right. So it's interesting that we talk about that, because we actually had, do you remember Amy Romero was speaking at EECI from Love and Science, and we actually met her at EECI, and at Vinervio we contacted her and had them do an audit of a couple of our client sites.
And oh, that's interesting.
That was really interesting, because it's not going to a company and asking, you know, help us with SEO. It was
more
look at our site that we've previously built and tell us what we could do better, or what we are doing well, what we're not doing well. And it was a very kind of holistic look at it, at the content strategy and kind of how we've structured the data and how we've optimized things. And that was really useful. We got this big long report full of useful things. Some we can definitely use, some of it I would question, but in general I think it was a really good thing to do. So we had really good results working with them.
Have you ever worked with a good web producer? Imagine Vinvio's got some good producers, yeah?
I guess at Vinvio we're relatively a small team, and what we do is, you know, at the kickoff meeting we have quite a few of us involved in that, and quite a few of us are actually involved in many stages of a project. So there's pretty good connect as it goes through each stage of the project. Have you worked with a web producer on other projects as well since then?
Yeah. Since Eileen? Yes. In fact, I'm working with one right now, although I don't think that they know that they're a web producer.
Okay.
But I'm kind of molding them a little bit, like making sure that they're asking the right questions. And you know.
Well, how would you define a web producer?
Kind of how I laid it out in the article. A web producer is basically a shepherd. I mean, they take ownership of the project. They are the liaison between everyone, and a buffer from the creative and the talent and the production staff and the bosses and the client, making sure that the production staff can do production as opposed to sitting in meetings and answering phone calls and just all those things that interrupt us. Just in terms of process, I'm sure you work in a similar way, where it takes a lot of time to get focused, a lot of time, and every time we get broken out of it, it's not like we can instantly go back into it. So a lot of wasted time, at least in my experience with meetings, where I'm just in getting in the zone, then often I got to go to a meeting, and then it takes me a good 2-3 hours to get back in the zone of like I'm actually in it and I'm productive and everything else falls away. And I'm creating as opposed to sitting in more meetings.
Hearing you talk about that, that's pretty much exactly what our project managers do. So.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and we have, Crystal's a great project manager, and she does all that and really allows us to focus on what we're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, big, and because I've noticed, I've worked with other places where they do have project managers. In fact, within web development, our nomenclature is kind of scattered. Like, a lot of people don't agree on what they mean. Like I say web producer, you say project manager, but we're kind of talking about the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I've worked with other project managers where that is exactly what they do. They don't really care so much about the project or the end result or the client, just so much as making sure that we deliver something to the client at a specific time that does what, you know, the client expects, but could care less about, you know, quality assurance or making sure there's 404 pages or error pages are looking nice or, you know, any of that stuff that actually puts a shine on a project. I love web producers for that. A good one is definitely pretty rare. So if you can kind of partner yourself up with one, I highly suggest it, because they elevate us. They make us look good.